Now from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is 3 and Out with Nate Hodges and Houston Kress. Fan Run Radio.
Rick Barnes and the Tennessee Volunteers all raise their shirts. They are the SEC Tournament Champions. Mark will hold it, and so he and the Volunteers will hold the trophy. SEC Tournament Champions to match their regular season title.
You know who Hendon Hooker is, returning quarterback for Tennessee, a dark horse Heisman candidate.
I haven't even said it on my own airwaves yet. I think Tennessee's going to beat Georgia this year.
Assuming it's not Alabama, it's not Georgia who wins the SEC, what other team is there that could challenge for the SEC title?
Well, I'm a little curious about Tennessee. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see if they can make that step and be a division contender.
Well, then I guess there's only one thing left to do.
What's that?
Win the whole thing.
Yes!
Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. Say, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance. We can go when we want to, night is young and so am I.
Welcome into the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios Fan Run Radio. Off and running. Off and running. No? Are we not off and running? I can hear myself now. We'll make it work. It'll happen. All that talk, Hickman. All that talk. You were burning and churning, ready to go. Do we have any idea what just happened?
No, but I hear you fine now.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's, we're off and running, like I said. It is Monday, August 8th. Nate is, I don't know what he's doing.
Owner's retreat.
Retreat. That's fine.
I hope he enjoys it.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he's going to miss being here with us. But I get to enjoy all of it with you two. Mostly with Hickman.
I was looking forward to this.
I'm not worried about Brett. I'm worried about you. That's how it works around here. How was your weekend, boys? Good. Good weekend.
It was good.
Good. Good. Good. Good
Eventful.
Weekend? Eventful.
Yeah. I mean, not really like anything crazy. It was just packed full with a lot of stuff.
Like what kind of stuff? Like stuff you can't say on the radio. Was it that kind of weekend?
I tore down a deck, then I built the deck back.
Different wood?
Yeah, different wood.
Okay, that's good.
It was time.
That's good.
Spent Saturday out on the lake. Had some really good hibachi. Pretty sunsets, you know, the beautiful sunsets of Douglas Lake. I'm sure you've seen them before, you know?
Yeah, I've seen a few, yeah. Time to time.
Absolutely beautiful. And rewatched Batman Begins, too, for the first time since I originally watched it as a kid.
And you were impressed?
Yeah, I was. It was a lot more entertaining than I remembered it.
Those three are easily the best. I mean, I was thinking Batman Returns. This was the Christopher Nolan Batman that you watched. Okay, just making sure.
And I think
that's the best trilogy of Batman, and it's really not even close.
And like now, like when I rewatch it, because I'm going to rewatch the entire trilogy, you know.
And naturally, yeah.
It was better than I expected, but it was still kind of hard to watch just because I know the Dark Knight's next, and so that's kind of what I was looking forward to the whole time because I was like, I really want to rewatch The Dark Knight, but I figured I should rewatch Batman Begins.
You can pretty much watch The Dark Knight with, like, it's kind of weird. The third one, Dark Knight Rises, you obviously need to see The Dark Knight. You can pretty much go without Batman Begins, even though that one is one of my favorites.
I'm OCD, so.
Got to watch them in order?
Yeah. Mm.
So, like, when you watch Star Wars, did you not do the shotgun start or whatever?
Now, when I watch Star Wars, I will only watch the entire thing.
That's a lot of TV time.
It's a lot of commitment, yeah. It's usually a month process when I get in a Star Wars kick.
A month?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have time to just sit around and watch movies 24/7.
Big Star Wars guy?
Oh, yeah.
Like nerd Star Wars guy, or just like you enjoy it?
I'm not nerdy. I really,
like,
really enjoy it.
Do you have a Stormtrooper outfit in your closet?
No.
Do you have a toy lightsaber?
Used to, yeah.
Hickman, do you still have it?
No. I mean, it might be somewhere as like a keepsake from my childhood.
Do you remember throwing it away?
No.
So
I
you,
was really
so
young.
You do still have a toy lightsaber. That's good. That's
Guess
good.
Whose lightsaber it was?
Darth Maul.
No.
Who?
Vader.
Just the red one?
Yeah.
So you're the dark side? Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, well.
Do you like root for Vader? Do you root for the dark side of the Force during Star Wars?
No, but okay. You know, I kind of see the resemblance, you know, powerful. Sometimes I'm Anakin, you know, and then once the show starts, to you,
you're
Vader.
Lord Vader, yeah. That adds up. Are you busy?
No.
Okay. Just making sure. Not the biggest weekend in the sports world. Tennessee did have two practices after being off on Friday. Had the first practice in full pads yesterday, and apparently a limited scrimmage that I believe the media was not allowed to see.
Right.
Not a ton came out of it. Running back still struggling to catch passes a little bit. That's to be expected. It's early, especially the freshman, Justin Williams-Thomas. I'm starting to get a little worried about the secondary.
Yeah.
Kamal Haddon is in a red non-contact jersey, as is Christian Charles.
We spoke of his arm brace, I think, on Friday or Thursday.
Right. And being in a red non-contact jersey, that's not that big of a deal, as long as it's not something, like, I don't know, anything that's arm-related when you play defense and have to, you know, tackle a lot.
Yes.
It kind of makes me a little bit nervous. I feel like we all know that secondary had to take probably the biggest step based on what you lost and how you looked in the bowl game with what you were going to have returning this year.
Right.
And having those two guys out, and I don't know. Again, like with the scrimmages being closed, which I understand, I don't necessarily love it, but you're not going to get a ton of information one way or the other. It sounded like the defensive line gave the offensive line some trouble in the scrimmage on Sunday. I think they said they were working on twists, stunts, kind of games on the defensive front,
right,
which gave us kind of some trouble last year. It sounds like Darnell Wright has cemented himself as the best offensive lineman on the team.
As he should be.
Well, then why is he at right tackle?
I mean, we talked about it. I guess that was Friday. We kind of briefly
It was Thursday or Friday, yeah.
About maybe just for the sake of the draft.
Is that a good move, though? I mean, Nate brought that up. Like, if it would benefit the team the most to have him play right or left tackle, and maybe it doesn't, but if it did, is it worth it to help a guy out with his draft stock and put him at his projected position when it might help your team more if he played left tackle?
The thing is, I don't think Josh Heupel and company would ever do anything like that if they didn't feel like
it could work.
Most beneficial for the team. So I think you can rest easy there. I mean, that's something. I mean, that's Bush League stuff right there, if that would be the case. But I don't think you have to worry about that with Josh Heupel and the staff.
I feel like we've said that about just about every staff at some point or another. And the last three have been pretty much bogus. Maybe go four.
Javontez Spraggins said that the entire Vols offensive line wants to win the Joe Moore Award.
Forgive me, I'm not too familiar with offensive lineman awards.
That is given to the nation's best offensive line unit.
Oh, the unit. Okay, good.
So
they want to be the best in the country.
So it sounds like they got a lot of work to do, is what you're saying.
I mean, I don't know. It's early. Usually the defense is ahead of the offense this time of year. I mean, because it's just see ball, go get ball.
We returned, what, four guys? And then we got
Mincy. Four, and then you got Mincy as a trainer. I don't know where – I mean, they've been working him, I think, at – left tackle, along with Jeremiah Crawford. It sounded like Jerome Carvin missed both practices over the weekend, and no one seems to know why. Some suggested maybe it was a couple of maintenance days.
Yeah, I'm reading it's precautionary.
Okay, like precautionary.
It just says it's dealing with a minor injury.
Okay, well,
just held him out for
precautionary. Doesn't exactly give me a ton of good feelies.
Right.
But Jackson Lampley apparently got some work at left guard over the weekend. I think he played okay in limited time last year. I don't think he's a bad player. This is just what happens during fall camp, though, right? Like, the biggest fear every day when you open up an article or watch a video is that somebody got seriously injured. I mean, it's football, so, like, there's going to be guys banged up. There's going to be nicks and bruises and things like that. But, obviously, we're still under the 85 limit, and you'd like this team to stay about as healthy as they possibly can. That's kind of a key.
Right.
So, again, not the worst news over the weekend. And it's also something you don't want to read too much into this time of year, because even the guys who are writing the practice reports aren't getting to see that much of practice. Basically, it's who's injured, who's not. Maybe you'll get to see the starting five offensive linemen in a drill,
right?
But they're not showing any, you know, 11-on-11 stuff to the media. That's just not going to happen.
This article says that Bryson Easton has stepped up on the defensive line.
Okay, good. That's good.
Looks to play at least a rotational role for the Vols this fall.
He's a true defensive end, correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, the more pass rush, the better. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. That was one of the things last year that I think would have really helped this defense and could really help your secondary this year if you've got some guys who can consistently get after the quarterback. It's a lot easier to cover a guy for 2 or 3 seconds as opposed to 5, 6, or 7. And if we go back and remember that Purdue game, that dude just stood back there and had all day to do whatever he wanted.
Right.
And when you did get some pressure, you forced him into mistakes. I mean, he threw 3 picks, but he also threw 5 touchdowns. And did he go over 400? I think he was over 400.
Yeah, pretty close.
I mean, it was – you got carved.
Here's more on Juwan Mitchell looking more like the linebacker we thought we were getting last year.
Yeah, did I see he had a, quote, acrobatic interception?
I believe I saw that, too, this weekend. And it says, finally healthy, looks healthy. And if we could get 2 studs at linebacker this year, Mitchell and Banks, I'd be feeling pretty good.
It sounds like the Perry kid's looking pretty good. Herring. I'm sorry, Herring. He's looking pretty good at linebacker also.
My rule of thumb is I like to have 1 stud at every level of the defense.
Ideally, that is good. 1 or more studs at each level, that's a game changer. I'd agree with you.
I mean, 1 linebacker.
Stud.
Give me 1 stud defensive lineman, at least.
1 stud.
And then give me 1 stud, somebody in the secondary.
Well, you've got a first-team All-SEC selection in Byron Young.
Yeah. And
is he a stud? Would you consider him a stud?
Byron Young's
team?
A stud.
Okay.
I think Jeremy Banks or Juwan Mitchell can be that guy. If he got 2 studs at linebacker this year, great. The question is, who in the secondary?
That is the question.
Like, if Alante Taylor ever had 1 more year of eligibility, I'd have paid money to have him back for 1 more season.
Yeah, that felt like it would have helped in a big way, right? You need some guys to step up, obviously. You do have some transfer options, right? Wesley Walker, Turrentine. Like, is this the year Brandon Turnage kind of takes that step forward, hopefully to be, like, an outside starting corner? And then there was a list of all the guys they've been running at star. It's, like, 6 guys deep for the nickel spot. So it feels like they do have bodies. They just need the right couple of guys to kind of step up.
Need capable and able bodies. There's a difference between bodies and capable bodies.
The good news is you're not going to be tested right out of the gate with this, you know, pass-happy offense that's just loaded with really good receivers. I think Pitt's serviceable at receiver, but with Keaton Slovis, you know, I don't project them to just throw with – I mean, I don't remember what Kenny Pickett had last year. He threw for a bunch, though, right? He was over 300 against us.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I don't think Keaton Slovis is going to have the kind of day that Kenny Pickett had against you last year. And I think Anthony Richardson's really good. I don't know that Florida has the receivers to really test you the way that some typical Florida teams have done in the past.
Yeah.
So I don't think you have to be elite in the secondary out of the gate to start the season the way you want to start it.
Right.
I mean, I think you can get to 4-0 even if your secondary takes a little bit to kind of get going. That said, by game 5, and there's a bye week in there, but you better have a really good plan for Kayshon Boutte. And what, because Brian Kelly's going to get decent quarterback play at LSU. It may not be elite, but he's going to get decent play. And last year when he was healthy, nobody could cover Kayshon Boutte.
Yeah, they'll find a way to get him the ball.
It's basically just drop back. Oh, he's double covered. I'm just going to throw it up to him anyway.
Yeah.
He's an elite playmaker.
LSU somehow has always made it work besides, I mean, obviously the Burrow year, but, you know, like, they've always had a guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or maybe Jamarcus Russell.
Well, it's crazy, too, because, I mean, like, Odell Beckham.
And they've gotten the receivers. It's crazy.
Well, but then they go to the NFL and they're even better. It's amazing how much talent they'll have at LSU at receiver.
And you forget about them because of Alabama studs.
Yeah, and then they just didn't never do as much because LSU could never find quarterbacks consistently the way a lot of other schools in the SEC could. Then those receivers get to the NFL and they blow up and you're like, oh, Odell Beckham Jr. Oh, yeah, he's from LSU. And he's one-handed over his head against the Cowboys on Monday Night Football.
Right.
And breaking records and torching defenses.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But the good news for Tennessee, you don't have to come out of the gate and be perfect in the secondary. However, that's the one I'm most worried about on the defensive side of the ball right now.
Right. Absolutely.
Plenty more practice notes. Also, a preseason top 25 was released by ESPN over the weekend. We'll tell you where your basketballs rank after a weekend at Soaky Mountain. Did you guys happen to see that video?
We'll have to hit on that later.
You a big Soaky Mountain guy? Can you give us the rundown?
Absolutely not. I've never been, probably never
will
go.
Isn't that part of your kingdom up there?
It is, but...
Okay. Extended kingdom.
I stay away from water parks, typically.
Okay, water parks and more after this. It's 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio. Three and Out continues in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios Fan Run Radio. Houston Crest, Adam Hickman, intern Brett, along with you this morning. You a big Soaky Mountain guy? Have you been there?
No.
Not a water park guy?
It is big, though. They say it's about...
It's the size of a mountain.
They say it's double the size of Splash Country, actually.
Wow, that's kind of
Splash Country.
It's kind of a burn.
Splash Country, I believe, is 45 acres, and I think Soaky Mountain is like 86.
Wow.
I got some buddies who did the construction up there.
You know everybody up there, so I'm not surprised at that. Not surprised at that. We'll get into that was a good video. I mean, if you couldn't watch that video and smile, I don't know what to tell you.
That's, yeah, same.
Weren't they giving Adu a hard time?
Yeah, because he had a life jacket on and five and a half foot water. Yeah. He's 7 foot tall, but hey, safety first. Yeah, you know.
Absolutely, all for it. We need him on the basketball court.
You take a knee to the head. It doesn't matter how tall you are. If you're in water, it's dangerous stuff. Who
could get their knee to his head, though, is what I want to know.
Dude, it's a wave pool. Things happen. People get strewn about. Those waves are serious business. I'm just glad he was taking the necessary precautions. Yeah. So was Zakai Ziegler. I think there was someone. he makes a little more sense, I suppose.
Yeah.
Surprised he wasn't being swaddled like a baby with Adu. Just holding them.
I had some water wings on.
Yeah, exactly. You got to make sure his head's above, you know, the water line there. It's just safety first. Hickman, you found a week one Tennessee fall camp takeaway preview.
Yeah.
Okay. Who wrote this delightful article?
This comes to us courtesy of Matt Ray. He put this out yesterday night.
Is that Sports Illustrated?
Yes.
Okay. What does Matt Ray think of week one of fall camp?
So bullet point number one, depth is improved but remains unproven in a lot of spots. I don't think that's much of a...
Improved, unproven. Okay, that's good. Pretty good stuff.
Well, improved but unproven.
No, improved as in it's better, but it's unproven. No, I like the double use of proof.
Here's what excites me. Bullet point two, the freshman flash.
Oh.
So he says that Squirrel White, Caleb Webb, Dylan Sampson, Elijah Herring, and James Pierce all look like they should find some sort of role for the Vols this fall. He calls Sampson a perfect match for what this offense calls for in its running backs, while Webb and White, being here in the spring, certainly have themselves ahead of the learning curve. Same for Elijah Herring, and he says James Pierce looks as advertised early on, and he's not shied away from hard coaching.
James Pierce, edge rusher, 6'5", 225. I saw a couple of people writing articles about him. Apparently has a really good first step, and with his frame can add a lot more weight without losing athleticism. I feel like we got him late. He was a four-star edge rusher. We got him late over, I can't remember who his other schools were, but I remember people being really excited about him.
So he says that they don't expect him to be a three-down player right away, but
naturally, yeah,
don't need him to be. Says he should find himself with opportunities on special teams and in passing situations.
Yeah, sounds like a third-down pass rush kind of guy. It's nice to have options there. And look, it's early. He's a freshman, so we'll see. But you feel good about Byron Young. I think we all feel good about Tyler Barron. Maybe not as consistently as Young, but if he takes a little bit of a step, that's really good. To have a third guy that you can put in on pass rush situations, that's really nice. And again, if that's the only thing he was able to do for Tennessee this year, I still think that's a really good, you know, pickup and kind of scenario for him to find himself in. Because as we just said, pass rush, especially when you know they're going to throw it, kind of important. I will say, so Caleb Webb and Squirrel White both were midterm enrollees, so they both went through the spring. Is that what that says?
Yeah.
Has it ever been as important or beneficial, maybe is the right word, for offensive players to enroll early if they can, now that Josh Heupel is calling the shots here?
Oh, yeah, I agree 100%.
It just seems like you hear people, and maybe we'll get into this. We teased it a little bit on Friday, the anonymous coach quotes on Athlon, and one of the things it said about Tennessee was their system's actually really easy to pick up on, but obviously with the tempo, it makes it tough for you to kind of audible into the right fit or the right, you know, coverage based on how fast they're moving and what they want to do. And I think that tempo is what makes it so hard to kind of pick up for the young players. I think getting here in the spring is more important now for offensive players than it ever has been. And I've always said it's important. Getting as many guys in, offense and defense, as you can in the spring to go through spring practice where it's not, hey, we're going to go through 15 practices. Oh, at the end of it, the season starts. To have those 15 practices, then an off season to continue to learn, continue to get in the weight room, continue to train with your team, get to know the guys, and then start fall camp. That seems like this is now more important than ever. Obviously, that wasn't necessary at quarterback with Hooker returning, but I think moving forward, getting quarterbacks in the spring is going to be big, and receivers too, because that's receivers may have more to learn than any other position on offense outside of quarterback. The way Heupel makes them kind of read the coverages and read the defender based on what route they're going to run afterwards, you know, that's pretty good. That's your guy, Caleb Webb, by the way. That's nice to see him get some mention. They said his leaping ability is off the charts.
I can see it.
He's, 6'3", 210? 6'3", 200, something like that? But apparently
he does not look big.
He's a flyer.
0.4, I believe. This is one I've talked about in recent weeks.
Is this you taking credit for 0.4?
I kind
of. Okay, just making sure.
Josh Heupel's culture is real. Since day one, Josh Heupel has emphasized changing the culture at Tennessee. Now, changing the culture is pretty common coach speak, but Heupel and his program are absolutely living it. Since fall camp started, new leaders have emerged with an evident buy-in from players new and old.
So the culture is real and it's good.
Each day at practice, Heupel and assistants spend close to 10 minutes connecting with players during stretches, providing insight and encouragement, and this is always welcomed by the players.
Did either of you guys see the spring practice breakdown on SEC Network with Josh Heupel, and they kind of, you know, chronicled a little bit of spring practice and followed around some guys? They did interviews with, like, Jabari Small, Amari Thomas, the specialists, the tight ends. Did you guys watch that by chance? You can say no. It's okay.
I did not. No.
Okay. It was pretty interesting.
I didn't either.
Heupel is the first person that every player sees when they walk into the facility on a practice day.
This is good.
He meets them at the top of the steps. Well, his routine, I believe, is to go get a cup of coffee, stand at the top of the steps, and he personally greets every single player as they walk into the building.
Does he greet them by name?
He does. Which is impressive.
It is pretty impressive.
Was it Ed Orgeron who always say, oh, yeah, two, he's a good player? Or no, it was Les Miles. Les Miles like seemed like he never knew his players' names. We got four around there on the pass rush and then three on the backside with the interception. It's like, man, do you really not know your players' names? But no, yeah, he seemed to know all of their names. I always try to watch that in the practice videos when he's – obviously, he's an offensive guy, so when the defense makes a play, I'm sure it hurts him in his heart just a little bit, but he was congratulating all the players by name, not, you know, good job, 2-3 or whatever. So, yeah, I think he's a guy who finds it important to know his players by name.
Next bullet point. Vols still need a running back three. Tennessee looked to add an additional running back for a couple of months, and with Lenith Whitehead sidelined for the season, it became imperative that the Vols find one. Jabari Small and Jalen Wright were both banged up at times last fall, and apparently Wright has dealt with a quad injury to start camp this year. So, insert Lynn J. Dixon.
Yeah, it said Wright had been a little banged up. Hopefully that's nothing too serious.
I mean, between Jabari Small...
Aren't we really looking for a four, though? I mean, it just...
If you don't have a three right now, it's just... You don't have a running back three, and you don't have the guy right now, I believe. And you're not going to have a
guy. We know it's Jabari Small and Jalen Wright, assuming he's healthy.
Yeah,
we feel good about Williams Thomas and Lynn J. Dixon. I think we've got... I mean, we know it's going to be one of those two. I guess they're just saying, at this point, it's not set in stone. I can live with that.
Yeah, and if one of those guys can't be it, I don't think it's the end of the world.
Well, I felt like going into last year, did we expect to see Jalen Wright as much as we did?
No.
But then you had the injury to Tyon Evans. Obviously, Jabari Small was banged up for a lot of the season. The good news is running back historically for true freshmen, when it comes to just knowing the plays, it's one of the easiest positions to make a really big impact as a freshman. I would say for Heupel, and this was true under Fulmer too, learning your pass pro pickups is obviously really big, and then just the physical nature of playing at this level as opposed to high school. And that's the one thing that worried me about Jalen Wright last year, just because he was a smaller guy. And then obviously with Williams Thomas, the good news with Lynn J. Dixon is he's done it before.
Yeah, he says Lynn J. might have the highest ceiling of anybody in the room, but has to learn the offense in a hurry and make a quick impression.
Well, we kind of said that, right?
Yeah.
You know, when it was announced that Tennessee was probably going to get him, we kind of went over, if he's the best player from day one, does he start? I think no. I still think it's Jabari Small. But would you be surprised if Lynn J. Dixon was two immediately?
No.
I wouldn't be either. I think he's a good player.
And, of course, Tennessee has a scrimmage coming up tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yep.
The old Optimism Tuesday scrimmage?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a little bit... Oh, I guess maybe that makes sense.
Yeah,
because the schedule's a little bit different, obviously, with us starting on a Thursday as opposed to a Saturday. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Apparently the left tackle position will probably be the focal point.
Yes, I would agree, considering they won't put our best offensive lineman at left tackle. If that doesn't work out, by the way, Nate and I are probably going to kill Glenn Ellerbe. On the radio, not like physically kill him, but...
Thank you for clarifying.
This has been a problem at Tennessee for a long time, and I don't understand why you would not play, A, your best five and leave them there, but why you wouldn't play your best tackle at left tackle. If this, for some reason, does not work out, I'm going to have a lot of questions. It seems like a quarterback like Hendon Hooker protecting his blind side would be of the utmost importance, but it perhaps not. Maybe they're...
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because Cade was right tackle when he was healthy, right? And he was your best offensive lineman last year or the last couple of seasons.
So I'm hoping this isn't a...
Maybe it's just Heupel's got some say in this, right?
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure. It's just, I could be wrong. It just feels like we always try to outsmart ourselves on the offensive line. It's like if he's your best lineman and he plays tackle, would you not want him at left tackle with a right-handed quarterback? That's just me. We'll chew on that and some other interesting topics on the flip side. It's 3 and Out, Fan Run Radio. No Depot, just a fun song to come into the radio show with. Panic Not.
The ultimate gotcha.
Big tease, is that what you're calling it?
Yeah.
It's fair. A couple more practice notes from over the weekend. Brew McCoy appeared to tweak something during routes on air and was trying to get it stretched out with a trainer on the side. That's not good. But as you said, he's not eligible yet anyway, so maybe it's not that big of a deal. Okay, we read Matt Ray's takeaways from camp.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is second and third hand information, but right now, what's the biggest takeaway you have from fall camp? Like, no news is good news. Are you feeling better about the season now than you were a month ago? Are you feeling a little bit worse? Are you about the same?
I honestly feel about the same. Last year, during fall camp, it was the Joe Milton hype train. And I'm not going to lie.
Dude, I don't even know if you're right. Who was hyping him up? I mean.
You?
No, that's not true.
You referred to him as Cam Newton about five times a day.
I said he was big like Cam Newton. I didn't say
Newton. That's what I was hyped up about last year. It was Joe Milton and the potential of a guy with his size and arm talent in the Josh Heupel offense.
I'm kidding, obviously. Yes, he was the talk of fall camp.
I was about to say you had me second guessing if I remember things correctly.
I'm trying to downplay it.
He was hyped up, right?
Oh, gosh, I hyped him up way too much.
Like this year?
I did the thing that I hate when people do. But I was hearing it from inside the program that he was money. Apparently, by the way, they've worked on his touch and accuracy with the deep ball. So
we're looking at fall 2023.
Yeah.
He's going to be the real deal.
He could be. If he beats out Taven Jackson and Nico Iamalieva, then I think you should probably feel pretty good about Joe Milton.
Like last year, you know, I fell for it. You know, I bought in a little too early.
You have to say fell for it. It's not like people were trying to trick you. I mean, the reports were good.
This year.
The biggest report, there was the biggest one. They had a scrimmage. It was a rainy scrimmage in Neyland. It was a 3rd and 13 from their own, like, 15-yard line. He hit an 85-yard bomb to Jalen Hyatt for a touchdown. And everyone said after that is when Heupel just fell in love with the guy and said he's going to be the guy because he can make plays that other guys can't. Apparently he rolled out, bought some time, threw it like 60 yards on a rope to Jalen Hyatt on a deep post. And after that,
both those guys went downhill after
even
that.
Even Heupel fell in love with him, obviously.
I mean, there's a lot to fall in love with. The guy's 6'4", he's 240, he's got a laser rocket arm, pretty good wheels for a guy that size.
Like this year, we don't really have that, you know, we don't have that guy that we're just absolutely drooling over, and
I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing.
I kind of like it.
Does he not have the athleticism to try another position? He's as big as our linebackers. He could play D end. I mean, maybe you just don't feel comfortable with Taven Jackson or something as the backup.
I think they feel good about Joe Milton as backup. Like I said,
it's just until he comes in.
Hey, we're not going to. No, let's not bash.
Okay,
the
sorry.
If Heupel can take the overthrow Joe we saw last year and have him ready to go next season and turn him into the quarterback we all thought that he was going to be, you talk about a selling point to any quarterback out there in the country.
Exactly.
As if Heupel's not already a selling point.
Yeah, hey, you're going to come break records here. Oh, by the way, I did it with this guy who everybody wanted to run off campus, and then when he finally got his...
He's a Heisman candidate.
He could be. He's got... Was it Golish? I think it was Golish in the article. It was Joe Rex wrote an article on The Athletic. And I know. You're not your favorite. Not your favorite. We get it. It's okay. You can read things by your not favorites, and they can still have quality content. But Golish basically said what we all said last year. Physically, there may not be a more talented quarterback in the country. I mean, if he hits half of the deep balls that he overthrew last year,
he should have had.
He keeps the job, and we beat Pitt by 50.
He should have had 200 yards passing in the first quarter against Pitt.
I do not disagree with you. I do not disagree with you whatsoever.
It was pretty comical to watch, though. So
I felt bad for him too. Like against Bowling Green, he comes in. He was throwing some ropes, and he had Was there four drops early, like in the first half against Bowling Green? I feel like the confidence got shot a little bit.
I watched one play against Bowling Green because I went back and I rewatched the highlights for that video.
Oh, did you do that over the weekend? Was that your show prep?
Well, I just had a feeling it might come up. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, you know, like they said, one of the Michigan coaches always said that if a play breaks down, there's always one guy designated like, hey, you just run.
Just go. Yeah.
And if we would have adapted that philosophy, there was one play in the Bowling Green game where I believe he even pointed to Hyatt
to go,
to tell him to go, and Hyatt didn't go. And if he would have went, it would have been, you know, assuming Milton puts it on the money, it'd have been about a 60-yard touchdown.
Did he hit a deep ball? He didn't, did he?
He hit Cedric Tillman.
Yeah, but
Tillman's Tillman the one was, who made that play.
Tillman was standing still in the end zone, but he didn't hit anybody in stride.
He made a couple throws to get us down to positioning against Ole Miss.
Yeah, he made some good throws, but I'm saying like a deep ball on target down the field.
Georgia.
Georgia?
Yep, he hit one against Georgia.
Oh, late when we were. See, maybe he had already fixed it by then.
Maybe. It was like a 40-yarder.
I'm just saying, apparently according to the article, throwing away the idea of Joe Milton being a good quarterback in this system is a bad idea. I mean, he could have transferred easily, and started at
a lot of schools.
I'd say at least half of the Power Five schools probably would have him as the starter.
Oh, he could have went to Rutgers, Northwestern, Vanderbilt.
Okay, you're a little low on my list, but I kind of get what you're saying.
What's the highest SEC school he could have started at this year?
I mean,
Mississippi State. No, because they got Rodgers.
No, they got Rodgers back. I mean, he would. I think he probably started at Missouri.
Missouri, Vanderbilt.
Wouldn't start at Arkansas. He might start at Texas A&M. He might be better than Haynes King. Haynes King did not look that good last year. Probably started at Auburn. Calzada had one good half against Alabama, and everybody's ready to crown him. I'm not sold.
But Joe Milton is that right there, like when you mentioned Josh Heupel's culture, he is a prime example of that.
Agreed.
The fact that you get a guy with that much talent and that much potential to come back and be positive about things and buy back in.
Not only just to be positive, but him and Hendon Hooker are inseparable. And you rarely see that really at any level of football, but especially modern day football where it's in the, you know, NIL and all this, like you would think
your competition. Yeah. He's your friend, but he's your competition.
Right. And I get that, like on any team, like, yeah, he's my friend, but more, he's my competition. These guys live together. They do everything together. Hooker gets back from SEC Media Days, and it's Joe Milton meeting him at the airport to pick him up. That's, I think, speaks to the culture that Heupel has instilled here. And that should be a very positive thing moving forward, assuming the results on the field come. Because I do agree with what Matt Ray said and what a lot of people are talking about, and that is the culture at Tennessee, for the first time in a very long time, appears to be quite strong. We'll hit our last break. Final segment, hour one, next. Final segment, hour number one. It's Three and Out Fan Run Radio. That might be the number one talking point so far out of fall camp, actually, is the quote-unquote culture, which, I'll be honest, I'm a little gun-shy on the word culture. Because in years one and two under any coach, that's what you hear. Because they typically, when you come in as a new coach, it's because the guy in front of you got fired, and you have to, quote, change the culture.
And it's hard to fully know.
Oh, right. For the first 2 years.
Being involved in the program.
The first 2 years, all Butch Jones, the culture is so strong. And then by years four and five, you realize that players are fighting each other. He's not the culture-driven guy that you thought. And the team is essentially falling apart from the inside out. That said, there were red flags for all of our previous coaches in the first year or so.
Yeah.
Now, I'm knocking on wood as I say this. I have not seen a big red flag or heard anything from the inside of the program that would maybe even put a flag up on Josh Heupel. It seems like he's a pretty straightforward, good dude. I know we all kind of made fun of the, oh, they're playing dodgeball, they're doing weird team-building activities and taco trucks and ice cream trucks, but it's actually kind of worked out. I mean, we talked about last week, Auburn's quarterback gets arrested for evading police. Anaya Smith is about to go to SEC Media Days for Texas A&M. He's arrested the night before with drugs and a gun. It's been pretty quiet, in a good way.
Yeah,
around the program since Josh Heupel got here. Obviously, you had the who's the quarterback?
Caden Salter.
I keep wanting to say Keaton Slovis. Obviously, that's the Pitt quarterback. Yes, Caden Salter. You had that issue almost as soon as Heupel got here, it felt like. Or as soon as he got here in the summer. But since then, it's been quiet in a good way. So maybe there's something to this. And I think the Joe Milton-Hendon Hooker relationship is... That's obviously it's quarterback, so it's going to get a lot of pub, but I do think that's important. I mean, we just talked about it, but Joe Milton could have left and gone just about anywhere he wanted. Now, he might not have started everywhere, but there aren't a lot of programs that would see him and just turn him down based on the talent that he possesses. And he decided to stay. I was surprised when he didn't transfer. He was asked recently, why didn't you transfer? Like, did you think about it? And he said, why? Why would I transfer? I love it here. I'm having the time of my life. I'm learning a lot. I learn more every day. I get to compete. And luckily for him, and hopefully for us, with the extra year, maybe there won't be as big of a drop-off from this year to next year once Hendon Hooker graduates.
I would love to see it all just work out for him. It's just 1 year. You know, I know we got Nico coming in, but how cool would it be if Joe Milton could right the ship and silence the people who criticized him?
People like who?
I don't know. People like those guys on Twitter who just think they know best and think they can do it all, you know?
Oh, like that. On Twitter?
Yeah, I've heard.
Not you, though.
I see a lot of I saw a lot of criticism of Joe Milton on Twitter back when he was starting for us.
But not you, right?
No.
You were. Okay. What'd you call him? Overthrow Joe? You probably saw that somewhere.
Yeah, I saw that.
And just thought it was funny and brought it to the show. You didn't, like, you know,
I didn't
say that because you actually thought that.
It is funny, but.
Okay, you're one of the people that you're talking about. You know this.
He'll right the ship. Nico will spend his freshman year learning.
Is this a Hickman hot take? Are you ready to announce Joe Milton as the starter for 2023?
No, I'm not putting that much faith in the kid, but I have some faith.
Wouldn't that be ideal, though?
Yeah, it would be.
Like, best case scenario, it's Joe Milton in 3 years of the program being the starter for his senior season, and you get a chance to continue to grow Taven Jackson, who has been getting some credit. It's weird because we're not going to hear a lot about Taven Jackson.
He's gone if Milton starts in 2023.
You think so?
With Nico waiting in the wings.
Will he sit here 3 years?
I mean, look, I'm all for Nico. That's great. 5-star, sure. There's a chance that he gets here and Taven Jackson is better, or Joe Milton is better. With Joe, there's only 1 year. And there's a chance you could redshirt Jackson this year. It might be, you know, if Hooker stays healthy, the only backup that's going to get run is going to be Joe Milton. At least, you know, he might play a little bit, Jackson, but he's not going to play in more than 4 games if everything kind of goes to plan. But there's a chance that the hype on Nico is a little heavy early and he actually takes a year or two to kind of develop into the player that we're all hoping he is. But I think best case scenario, next year, it's Milton, and then Taven and Nico kind of battle it out after that.
And I'd agree with that.
I'm glad you agree. We'll kick off hour 2, 3 and Out, Fan Run Radio.